You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams, stop dieting so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is what it's all about, right? How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. How amazing to just think about what you're going to do that day and not what you're going to eat or what you're not going to eat. How amazing to just go in and wear what you want out of your closet instead of thinking about, do I wear this from this size that I am or the size that I want to be or the size that I was? Just wouldn't it be great to leave all of this food, weight, and body image stuff behind you and just live your life? That is what I am here to help you do. So welcome to my special pre-recorded show. I am recording this on Sunday, so if you're listening to my normal time Wednesday, I'm not here. I was sick last week, and I am on call for jury duty next week, so I did not want to go 2 weeks without doing a show. So I'm here doing an extra show for you all. And you are welcome to join me today. The number here is 818-570-5085. If you want to call in and talk with me today, that is the number. Again, 818-570-5085. It's a new number because I've switched over from the regular radio room, the studio, to the new video studio. So I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of unhealthy, unhappy relationship with food is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. So also, please feel free to call me anytime. Do not worry about interrupting me. I'm just going to start talking. And when you call, you call. Don't wait for like the perfect spot where I'm done with my topic or anything like that. Just when you feel like calling, you call me. I'd rather hear from you than say what I'm saying. And I can always go back to whatever it is that I am saying. So, okay, we have some questions. Here is a question from James, and he says, what have you found to be some ways for me to remind myself to connect to your very reflection when I find my emotions beginning to drive urges towards harmful behaviors with food? So he's saying, how can he remember very, which is the acronym that I created to help you stop or understand the binge cycle. So when you start thinking about what's going on, when you feel an urge to go to the kitchen or the drive-through or whatever, the pantry, remember very. And very is designed to help you get in touch with what you're feeling, and very is designed to help you respond to what you're feeling instead of using food to respond. And VARY stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So V for validate, A for acknowledge, R for reassure, and Y for yourself. And how that goes, by the way, for those of you who are not familiar, is there's a situation, say some kind of upsetting situation. You just had a fight with your husband or your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your kids. You had a fight with somebody and you feel bad. Now, if you tend to be going to the kitchen to, you know, soothe yourself with ice cream or distract yourself with some other kind of food or whatever, what you want to do is say, wait a minute, if I am turning to food, I'm turning away from something else. What is that something else? Well, you just had a fight with someone, you just had an argument, you're upset. So what you do is you rather than tell yourself, don't be upset, because that doesn't work. You cannot drop feelings. You cannot just let something go. You cannot talk yourself out of it, nor can you stuff it down. What you do is you want to You want to respond to it. So say, of course I'm upset. Now, here's the thing about very. Really, it's acknowledge and then validate, but that didn't work for my acronym. So the V and the A kind of go together. Bear with me. So you say, of course I'm upset. You acknowledge it. Yeah, I'm upset. I am really upset. I just had an argument with someone I care about. That's difficult. That's upsetting. That's painful. That's acknowledging it. And then you validate it. Of course I feel this way. How could I not feel this way? Anyone who has just had a fight with their husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, child, whoever, friend, is going to feel upset. Of course I feel upset. And then you reassure yourself. But I'm going to work through this. I'm going to talk to the person. We've had arguments before. We've worked it through. I'm going to find a way to understand what's going on and come to some kind of compromise. We're going to work it out. We are not always going to be feeling this way towards each other. That's reassurance. And then, you know, you're going to feel better. So that's very. And that is a way of responding, whereas eating is a way of reacting. So to answer James's question, how can he remind himself of very? Well, I suggest doing things that some people have told me have worked for them. They put a big very on their refrigerator. They, you know, they put post-it notes all over the place that just say very. They know what that means, or they write it out, or they do a, someone did a very highly, you know, designed sort of a calligraphy, beautiful with flowers around it, very. I would say just put a sign on your refrigerator that says very so that you see it. Put it on your cabinets, your in your kitchen, put it wherever it is, put it in your car, very. And that will be a reminder for you to validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself instead of using food to escape those feelings. It's hard to feel upset. It's hard to feel angry. It's hard to feel anything difficult or painful. Those feelings are difficult. And remember, our culture is designed, unfortunately, we've designed it so that we look at feelings as a weakness. Somehow you're strong if you're able to not feel something, and you're weak if you have a feeling. Rather than, no, a feeling is just a response to a situation. It is not a character flaw. And we cannot just let go of our feelings. They are a response to a situation. And when you respond to something, you have to, you know, you're having a reaction to something, you have to respond to it. You cannot escape it. And eating, turning to food, binging, or just, you know, overeating or overindulging as a way to escape the feelings, that is a way of abandoning yourself rather than responding to yourself. So very, very important to keep in mind. So James, that would be my recommendation. Get a bunch of post-it notes, print out a huge very on your computer, do something, put up those signs so that when you go into the kitchen, that's what you see. Okay. Another question from Tony with an I. She says, what are some coping skills or strategies you teach to survive the comments people make when they notice that you've lost weight and you'd rather not talk about it? I've done well at just saying thank you or I'm making better choices. I was just interested in knowing if some of your patients also do not like talking about their weight loss or weight gain with others. I think it's because I've been up and down in weight my whole life, and it's hard to be excited and respond to nice comments since in my mind, I always eventually fail. Okay, well, Tony, there's a lot here in what you're saying. So first of all, when people make comments that, oh, you've lost so much weight, you look so great, it sounds like that would be a nice thing, right? Well, what people often say is, what they hear is, you look great now, but boy, did you look terrible before. They don't hear the compliment. They hear the, wow, you look better now. You look terrible before. And then it just makes them feel bad because they're focused on, well, what are you saying? Are you saying I look bad before? So that's why often people would rather not talk about it. They'd rather, and also people feel suddenly observed, right? When someone makes comments about your weight loss, again, on the surface, very nice, lovely, a compliment, yay. However, it makes you realize that you're being like kind of scrutinized. It can make you feel like you're being looked at, observed, scrutinized. Suddenly you're not this person that they're relating with. You're this object that they're looking at. And that can also feel uncomfortable. That can feel very uncomfortable for people who have had issues with objectification or molestation or some kind of sexual abuse in the past. Suddenly feeling as if you're a body to someone, suddenly feeling like you're a physical thing to somebody can be very upsetting, of course. And it can revive old traumas, old wounds. It can open up old wounds. So as you could see, what is a simple, innocuous comment, wow, you look so great. You've lost so much weight. Good for you. How did you do it? Awesome. You know, all of that, I don't mean to mock, but I guess I kind of do because I did. So a seemingly on the surface innocuous comment can be very layered, make people feel suddenly scrutinized, make them feel objectified, revive old feelings about being seen as a thing, not a person. Again, if you've been the victim of some kind of sexual abuse or sexualization, it can make you very uncomfortable. It can, in the present, then revive all kinds of feelings from the past. And it can also mean different things. People have told me things like, you like me now, but you didn't like me before, especially if it's a family member. Suddenly, there's the idea that you're going to give up unconditional love and acceptance. And it can feel conditional. Oh, you look great now. Oh, I'm proud of you. You look great. I'm so proud of you. Again, perfectly nice thing to say on the surface, but how it can resonate is, oh, you're proud of me because I look the way you want me to look. Or, oh, now you accept me because I look how I've lost weight and I fit your image of who I should be. So now there is this conditionality to your acceptance of me. I've got to lose weight in order for you to feel good about me, that kind of a thing. And I should stress that these ideas are not immediately conscious. Nobody, rarely do people realize that they're having this reaction, that this meaning is getting activated. Often, all they're aware of is some kind of weird, uncomfortable, yucky feeling. Oh, they just gave me a compliment and I feel weird about it. But they don't really know why. So these are some things to think about as to why you, Tony, or anyone else who's listening who can relate to this might feel bad when you get a compliment or have a mixed feeling rather than feel good. Also, Tony, you said it's hard to be excited and respond to nice comments since in your mind you'll always eventually fail. So, of course, that feels terrible. It's like, yeah, I look good now, but next you're going to be disappointed the next time you see me because I'll have gained weight because I'll have failed, that kind of a thing. Why do you think you will eventually always fail? I think that would be something to explore. What is it that causes you to be on this yo-yo dieting or lose weight, gain weight cycle? Sometimes people are afraid to be thin. Yes, it is hard to eat in a certain way that can be very restricted, and that's why I don't believe that dieting is the key to weight loss. You know, I can quote you all kinds of statistics and give you examples of why dieting actually makes you gain weight in the long run, not lose weight. So it can be very awful to be on a diet and be so restricted. And that's why sometimes people go off their diets. But there are also deeper reasons why people may go off their diets. For example, what I just talked about, objectification. Sometimes losing weight can make you feel like you're going to get some attention that you weren't getting before. And that might make you feel uncomfortable if suddenly you're getting checked out by the opposite sex or the same sex, depending on your orientation. Suddenly people are checking you out and you have some mixed feelings or conflicts about sexuality or about being viewed as an object. Then that is going to be difficult. Sometimes it's hard to lose weight because you are afraid that you're going to be impulsive. I've had people who said, well, I'm afraid to lose weight because if I lose weight, then I'm going to do something brash and rash and crazy. I've had people say, oh, I'm going to cheat on my husband. I'm going to cheat on my wife. I'm going to look for a different job. I'm going to do something to make my stable life of consistency suddenly not so stable and not so consistent. I'm afraid that when I lose weight, I'm going to be impulsive. Another reason why people fail at weight loss, their word, not mine, or why they sabotage themselves is there's all kinds of expectations. And this is different from impulsivity. This is, well, when I lose weight, then I'm going to start dating and then I'm going to find a partner and then I'm going to, you know, have kids. Or when I lose weight, then I'll feel confident enough and then I will do this thing that I've always been too afraid to do. And there's this expectation that now you've lost weight, now you've got to do this thing. Now you've got to change your life. Now your life has got to be better. And really, all that happens when you lose weight, yes, there's a period of euphoria. Oh, I can buy anything in the store. I can go in a regular store. I can fit into anything. I can look good in whatever clothes that I'm buying and all that. And then you're just living your life in a different size body. It's your same life. And so there goes the hope that by changing your weight, you can change your life. So that's another reason people sabotage. It breaks the illusion that by losing weight, you change your life. By losing weight, you can get people to treat you differently. That's a big one. Oh, that person doesn't like me. Well, I'll show them. I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to look so good. They're going to want me back. Well, first of all, that really demeans the other person because it means that that person's interest in you is solely based on appearance. And secondly, it demeans you because it means your value is somehow greater if there's less of you. Now, how does that make sense? It's this idea that we have that is absolutely erroneous, absolutely untrue. You cannot measure your value on the bathroom scale. Losing weight will not make people like you. Losing weight will not change your life. It will just change your pant size. It'll change. That's all that changes, right? The number on the scale and the number of your clothes. And so facing this can be hard because if you have this idea of, well, when I lose weight, then everything's going to be great. Then I'll be happy. It's hard to give up that illusion. It is a magnificent illusion, a fabulous fantasy. You can control your life. You can control your world. You can control other people simply by losing weight. But a part of you knows that when you lose weight, that's all that happens. You're not going to become a more confident person. You're not going to become more outgoing. You're not going to suddenly have all the things that you don't have at this weight. And it can be hard to give up that fantasy and that illusion. So I think that is that for Tony's question. If anybody has any questions, you have any further questions, feel free to, write me in comment below and let me know if you, I'm trying to find myself. Trying to find myself on Facebook. If you have any questions, just post them and I will get to them either today or the next time I'm on the show. All right. So the last time that I did a show, I talked about New Year's resolutions and I talked about making a new kind of New Year's resolution, more about your relationship to yourself rather than losing weight or changing behavior. So it is now past mid-January, so we're past that resolution phase. You know, we start January strong, and we're all like, yes, this is the year. It's a new year. In this case, it's a new decade. We've got this. We're going to do this. We start strong, and then we fizzle. Often we fizzle. Only 8% of people keep their New Year's resolutions, and I think that number is probably pretty high. Now, I want to talk to you today about something that's pretty common, but isn't talked about a lot. And it is related to post-holidays, post-New Year's resolutions. And that is called the post-holiday blues. You've heard of postpartum depression. Maybe you've heard of post-vacation depression. Well, this is post-holiday depression. And a lot of people experience sadness when the holidays are over. And it is, again, it's really common. And there are many reasons of that. And I'm going to go over a few of them, courtesy of Psychology Today and Bustle Online. So here we go. It is the post-Christmas, post-Hanukkah, post-New Year's, post-general stuffing oneself period. And the new year and the return to work are happening. And unsurprisingly, one response to this less twinkly and sugary time of the year is a widespread bout of misery, the post-holiday blues, as they're called. Psychologically, it's a mixed bag of crashing after a period of intense emotion and stress, the body recovering from indulgence, adjustment to the return to work, and the easy to understand sadness that comes when the good times are over. But getting into the nitty gritty of our brains as they recover from the ho ho hoing can help us drag ourselves through the bleakness of January. When you were a kid, and if you still have a seriously stressful holiday period as an adult, whether it's because of travel or irascible relatives or lunatic children, the crash is at least likely partially due to the adrenaline come down. After the stress rush of the holidays, where stress and anticipation kick your body into high gear, a post-adrenaline period in which stress hormones withdraw can cause you to feel a bit under the weather and depressed. But that is only one part of the picture. If you're feeling deeply down now that the Christmas tree needs to be thrown out, the decorations packed up, and the new tights bought for the return to work, take heart. Psychology's got you covered to make it all a bit better. Here's what you need to know about the post-holiday blues and how to make them better. First of all, it's common, but not serious. Psychologists have a basic consensus about the post-holiday blues. They're not serious depression, but they do seem to be widely felt. Some call it post-vacation syndrome, which combines feelings of irritability and difficulty concentrating after time off from work. The return to the workplace appears to be a big trigger, in part because the effects of a relaxing holiday time don't seem to last all that long. You know how that goes. You know, I don't know about you, but if I go on vacation and I'm gone and I'm somewhere for, let's say, a week, which I haven't done for a while, but let's say I'm in summer for a week and it's wonderful. And the whole time I'm there, it's glorious. And I just feel like reality and life and the day-to-day stuff are so far away. And I'm relaxed and it's wonderful. I'm having a great time seeing new things or doing nothing at all. Then I come home, go back to work, and suddenly it feels like I wasn't gone at all. You know that feeling? So that, and then you need a vacation from your vacation. So that's kind of what happens with after the holidays. Like you sort of, it's all a blur, it's all a rush, and then it's January and you're back to it, and then it's mid-January and you're like, oh, what happened? In fact, a BBC study found that 76% of British workers thought their stress levels rocketed back up to pre-holiday highs within a week of getting back to the work groove. So if this has been your experience in January, you are not alone. It's also known as the contrast effect. So the big factor in post-holiday blues is a simple psychological problem known as the contrast effect, where your brain, not your mind, your brain has to adjust between radically different experiences. So the amped up expectation of the holiday period gives way to the less exciting post-vacation weeks. That's a classic contrast, right? It makes us perceive the post-Christmas period as far more depressing and boring than it actually is. So because we have so much fun, or because we're having, hopefully, or we anticipate having fun, or we hope to have fun, or we're just not doing our usual work thing before the new year, when we're just having a different experience, having more time off, maybe more fun, more time with people we love, more celebration, the contrast between that and work seems greater than it is. The Psychology Today reminds us the brain is just exaggerating. You aren't actually doomed. Seasonal affective disorder, SAD, SAD, makes it worse. If you're already inclined toward depression, the post-holiday blues will be particularly acute. But another factor that may be contributing is your body's sensitivity to the winter lack of sunlight. This is not so much true here where I live in Los Angeles, Southern California, sunny places where you get a lot of sun and you don't have a lack of serotonin because of lack of sun. But if you are in most places in this country where winter is winter and it's raining and you're shoveling snow and it's cloudy and you're not getting a lot of sunshine, you may be affected by seasonal affective disorder, which hits a large proportion of people where colder weather means a lack of access to sunlight. And sunlight is a key part of the body's production of serotonin. And serotonin has everything to do with our sense of well-being. In fact, 1 in 6 people may suffer from seasonal affective disorder. And good news is it may be easy to fix because there are special lamps that mimic the sun's rays. They are available. There are a ton of them on Amazon. And you just put them on and sit in front of that for 20 minutes, I think it is. And really, you'll see a huge benefit. So that's a lot of the mind stuff. Now let's get down to the more of the psychological part. It's also your relief in letting your character armor slip. Part of the psychological letdown of the post-holiday period, according to some psychologists, is that it's the result of all this effort. Oh, here's a caller. I know who this is. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Nina. I was going to say good morning, but it's afternoon.
It's afternoon and it's Sunday. Good afternoon. Happy weekend.
Yes. Happy Sunday. I had something kind of dramatic happen this weekend. Well, no, not this weekend, this week. I kind of had an instance of what I called binge drugging instead of binge eating. I don't think I've ever really had like binge eating per se. Have I binge ate? I don't know. I don't feel like that's one of the main things I struggle with, but I had like a binge drug thing where, so I did matcha in the morning, and I made a matcha latte in the morning, and then I take a few medications, like Prozac, which is a antidepressant, and then I took something else, and then I took an energy drink called Celsius. I took, what else did I take? I drank black tea, which has caffeine. And then at the end of the night, I like came home to my boyfriend, and I was like all wired and crazy. And so I've never really done, like, I don't really do, like, I know sugar and caffeine and all of these things are drugs, but I've never, like, you know, done drugs or whatever. But I took, like,
Sugar is not a drug.
It's not?
No, okay. It is not. But
it's caffeine?
Caffeine, I guess, it depends on how you've termed drugs. But I guess what I hear you saying is that you're very aware that you are using substances to change your mood, to like give you a buzz or wire you, or like you something that you're very aware of having to change your state of being. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I take the, I'll just say it, Adderall. I just started taking Adderall recently, which was prescribed to me by a doctor.
Right.
And, you know, that helps me focus, and it makes me super productive, and, like, I'm able to get a lot done, and it just makes me, like, I just perform at a really, really high level. But I'm already smart, and I perform at a high level. So, yeah, I think I take that to, like, help me at work, and then I took the Celsius so I could go work out because I was tired, but I really wanted to work out. I felt like I needed to work out because the night before we ate cookies and brownies after dinner.
Okay.
So I took the Celsius to get energy.
So.
And then, yeah.
All of the things. Oh, no. Go on. I want you to finish.
No. I was just going to say, so I took the Celsius to work out. And then at the end, my boyfriend was tired and I was all wired and I was like, fuck, like, now I should, sorry, excuse my language, I forget wrong way. Anyway, now I'm like, okay, let me sleep, and then I, like, tried to take the gummies, and I had, like, the worst experience of my entire, it was up there, actually, yep, worst, one of the worst experiences of my life.
Okay. Oh.
It was horrible.
Okay, so you took CBD gummies and had a horrible experience. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so first of all, I want to recognize you and acknowledge you for being aware of this behavior, not just doing it, but clearly you're aware of it and you're recognizing that there's some kind of bingey attitude towards all of this. And I want to commend you for being able to reflect on, oh, I'm doing this. Why am I doing this? Rather than just, this is what I did. So a couple of things. One is there's this idea of being productive that is privileged over taking care of yourself. So, you know, we exercise because it's good for our bodies, not because we ate cookies. But
right.
there's this should. And so you don't listen to your body. You take this, do this energy drink so that you have the energy to go do something because you should do it. You take the Adderall to make yourself even more productive than you already are, because as we've talked about in the past when you've called the show, there's this idea that you are what you do. Like, you are the human doing, not the human being. That if you aren't being productive, there's almost something wrong.
That makes sense. And yeah, with the working out, I think, yeah, I wasn't listening to my body. I'm like, oh shit, I ate those cookies, I ate those brownies, I should work out. And I actually really like working out and I wanted to work out, but I didn't have the energy. So in that moment, I could have just like recognized, okay, Nicole, you're tired. Maybe your body's telling you like rest. Like, why take the substance to put me in a state where I could do what I think I should do, rather than just listening to my body and being loving and compassionate towards myself. Like I am with my sister. Like, my sister texts me sometimes. She's like, I just finished work. I'm so tired. Should I feel guilty if I don't go to the gym? And I tell her, No, like, of course you shouldn't feel guilty. Like, you need rest. Listen to your body. So I should talk to myself the same way, maybe.
That would be a wonderful idea. Yes.
Yeah.
And talk to yourself from I need rest. I'm tired, and that is, I've got to listen to what I need and give myself what I need rather than should on myself. Right? All this
But I
should.
Guess in that moment, then I'm like, Nicole, like, it's mind over matter.
Who's talking?
I'm talking to myself third person.
Yes.
I know. I just caught it. But who's talking? Let's see.
And why should it be mind over matter? See, there. Why should it be mind over matter? Why are you slave driving yourself like that? Right? Because you're
I
saying.
I don't know. And then I also tell myself, like, nothing tastes like skinny. Like, nothing is as good as skinny feels. By the way, can you still hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yes.
Okay.
You know
I
what?
Say, like, you know how to. Nothing tastes like
who
skinny
who
feels
said
or
that?
whatever.
I forget which supermodel said that, but you know, that's about deprivation, and all of these thoughts keep you from you, because all of these thoughts are what you should be doing: work more, produce more, work out, lose weight. But in the service of what? What is it that you are hoping to achieve? And if you recall, I think it's been months, you were always like the 2 pounds, losing 2 pounds. And
yeah.
We talked about how as a child, you were made to feel as if there was something wrong with you because you weren't skinny and you felt less lovable.
Yeah.
And so you have to remember that under all this drive to not gain weight or to lose weight is a sense of having to prove that you're lovable, as if you are going to be lovable if there's less of you. As if what makes you lovable and acceptable is your weight rather than who you are.
Yeah. But to answer the question that you posed, like, why do I want to be more productive? Well, I want to be more productive because I want to make more money, because I want to live a nicer life, because I want to build an empire, because I want to be successful, because it means something to me to achieve, to perform at a certain level. So
but,
that's why.
But that isn't, you can work hard without always working. Because
yeah,
what happens is you push yourself, you push yourself, you push yourself. You don't have balance. You don't have downtime. You don't have being time. And then you burn out, or you get sick, or, you know, something. You working hard does not translate into necessarily into only into hours. No.
Yeah.
You need balance, because you will, you know, if a battery is, if a cell phone is on all the time, it's going to run out of batteries. If you're working all the time, you're going to run low on batteries, and then all of this energy stuff.
I think we do have balance. I mean, I take time to get a massage, to do acupuncture, to work out, to take a dance class, to hang out with my boyfriend, to go to dinner with my friends.
Those are all doing things. You're all, you know,
oh,
you're
yeah,
going,
true.
You're going to dance class. You're going to do all this stuff. Those are still things you're doing. Where's the recharging?
I don't know. What can I do to recharge?
Well, what are some things that come to mind? What would you tell your sister?
Just hang out in bed one day. Just relax. Just go to the ocean for a walk.
There you go. And you don't have to hang out in bed all day, right? You can hang out in bed for an hour. You can go to the beach for a couple of hours. You can see, when I ask you, what would you tell your sister? You have the answer.
I know, it's funny. That was so on point. Yeah, okay. And then, just, it's not in my blood to be. I'm always doing, you're right. And then the other thing is, I want to be completely honest about something. I think one of the reasons that I was down to take Adderall is because it takes your appetite away. So it allows me not to eat for many hours. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Well, I'm glad you're being honest. And again, want to look a little bit below the surface. So all of this, the Adderall, the energy drinks, the caffeine, the matcha, all of this, these are weeds. And we want to notice they're weeds, but they're grown by a root. So we want to go under the surface and look at the root of all of this. And it seems that you're proving yourself constantly. And you're proving yourself by accomplishing. And by the way, look at the stakes you put to yourself. I got to build an empire. There's nothing wrong with wanting to build an empire. I'm down with that. I'm into empire building too. But you don't all of a sudden have an empire.
You have an empire.
But I didn't.
You are an empire.
But I that happened over time, right?
Yeah.
So, I never said I'm going to build an empire. I said, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do a podcast. Oh, I'm going to do a YouTube series. I'm going to write another book. I'm going to, go, oh, I'll do that radio show. Yes, I will. I just set out to do one thing at a time. So
yeah.
Partially you set yourself up and you scare yourself into, slave driving yourself. So partially there's this proving yourself by accomplishing. And then there's also this proving some good enoughness by being afraid to gain weight, as if the lovable, good, acceptable Nicole weighs up to a certain amount, and anything over that amount, now you're not good anymore. I'm overstating it, but it seems like that's,
yeah, it does. I think that that definitely resonates. Like, I don't even feel good in my own skin. Well, the thing is, I don't even go on the scale anymore. I can't even tell you how much I weigh, because I can't tell you the last time I went on the scale, I was maybe like 116, 17 pounds. I can't even tell you the last time I went on the scale to tell you how much I weigh. And I probably weigh less now because I've been taking Adderall for 2 months. And I don't eat much, I don't eat much during the day. And so I know that I've lost weight.
Yep, but...
And I don't want to go on the scale because I don't want to start obsessing about the number again.
But even, but I'm glad you're not on the scale, but it's still there. The scale mentality is still there. This idea that you are a better you, like this fear of being at a certain number, as if you are no longer going to be good enough, and you're not even good. You don't even feel good enough. So what's good enough? I mean, there might be people who are listening to this who say, well, oh, she weighs 116 pounds. I can't relate at all to this. But what you can maybe relate to is people who are listening and saying, I can't relate to a person who weighs 116 pounds and doesn't feel good about herself. But the idea is that no matter what you weigh, you can't measure your self-worth. And so it doesn't even matter what that number is. If you think you're a better you because you're less, where did you get that idea? You're using, Nicole, you're using the number to give yourself some assurance that if you just get lower and lower, you're going to feel better and better about yourself. But it doesn't work because your sense of self cannot be found on a scale. Your sense of self has to be found within.
Yeah. And I think it all comes from my mom and my aunt, and, that was passed down from her mom, and just like the idea of, like, even hearing her say, like, hawk to set, I'm like, dirt on my head, like, let me go under the ground if she gained like 2 or 3 pounds. So that's kind of just like how I was, wired and raised, and now I'm like trying to rewire myself. And it's a it's a lot of work, but like, yeah, it's still there. Like the wires are still there and I'm still working on rewiring. And, I'm aware.
You are aware, and that's what I
I'm aware.
acknowledge. That's why I wanted to acknowledge you at first. You are aware that there's something about this that's not right. There's something about this sort of binginess.
Yeah, and then the Adderall thing, it's like, okay, because I didn't eat all day, I don't feel bad about eating a cookie. So I don't know if I actually like fixed the problem or have completely, I don't know if I've completely like rectified the issue or fixed the issue, because I'm not eating normally during the day. So it's like, okay, then I think about like, okay, maybe I've only eaten 200 calories all day.
This
so it's
is
okay to eat bread and butter with my dinner.
No,
that's how I justify
no,
it.
No, Nicole, this, first of all, this is dangerous. This is unhealthy. And this is going to mess with your metabolism big time. And it's unsustainable, and it's too restrictive. It's sort of anorexia-ish. It's not okay, and you don't have to earn.
Yes.
You don't earn the right to eat a cookie. You don't earn the right to eat something by starving yourself all day. You have pathologized certain kinds of food as if it's forbidden, and therefore you have to starve yourself to have the right, or exercise and have the right to eat it, or have to make up for it, rather than we all have to eat a range of food. 80% of it should be healthy, 20% of it can be cookies. That's what dietitians say. And to change, but again, this focus on cookies, eating 200 calories, not eating, it is distracting from the real core root issue, which is that you don't feel that as you are, you don't feel good enough. That's the problem. Losing weight and not eating cookies is not going to make you feel better about yourself.
But I do feel good enough.
You just said a few minutes ago you never feel good enough.
I did?
You did. That no matter what
you,
you did. You said you don't. You never feel good enough.
I don't think I did.
Oh. Well, regardless of whether you said it or not, I thought I heard it. Might have been mistaken.
Okay.
Or maybe I misheard you. What is it all in service of? What is all of this going to do for you? Then what? My question is, then what? You get to some number, then what? What do you prove to yourself?
That I can starve myself. I don't know. What? I don't know what I prove. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how to fix it. I'm getting a little emotional. I mean, I understand it's a problem. I know it's bad. I know what I'm doing. I know I'm aware. And just now I just don't know how to fix it. I know it's unhealthy. I know I should just be eating, you know, regular meals, eating when I'm hungry and not taking this pill to take my appetite away.
Okay, but,
you know,
but this is
look,
what we know and what we do are different. It is not logical. It is psychological. That's why it makes no sense to someone to say, I know what I'm, oh my gosh, I just realized we're out of time. Nicole, we got to talk this about this again. We're out of time, but I want to pick this up with you next time. So I won't be here on Wednesday. You'll call me next week. Okay.
Okay. 10 All right. days from now then.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, everyone.
Okay.
Bye. I got so caught up with talking to Nicole. I did not see what time it is. This is a very important topic, and I think, you know, it's relatable in a way to people who seem to have the opposite issue of not being able to stop eating. This idea that if you change the behavior, if you change your weight, something, it's going to resolve something. What is that something? What is that something? That's my food for thought. For Nicole and for all of you, I will be back. Hopefully have a normal voice by then. And everyone have a great week. And I will see you soon. Thank you for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like more food for thought, check out my website, Dr. Nina Inc. Follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Nina Inc., DrNinaInc. And be sure to sign up for my free guides and giveaways so you'll be first to know about the exciting things that I have coming up. Take good care, and I'll see you soon.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.